is a very important association. It's Fellowship of Truth. Normally, we don't realize what takes place at a satsang. It's not an open discussion or debate. There is a definite relationship going on between the devotee and God and the living master in the world at satsang. Jesus, when he was in the body, he said, when two or three are gathered in my name, not in the name of Jesus, gathered in that sankara, gathered in the master consciousness, there am I in the midst. Any sincere Christian meditating at a satsang by closing his eyes can see the radiant form of Christ. Is that sincere? Let alone a living master. Satsang is to get you to realize that the radiant form is always present and that you can always experience it. And it's not just a mere get-together. And when I hear people say, we don't have no more meditation because we're falling apart from every part, then that's your loss, not mine. People who tell me that they don't get together to meditate in groups can't blame me. Blame themselves for not understanding that they're losing out on a contact with the master inside of themselves. The purpose of a satsang is to experience that. Now I'll tell you a story. This happened to the living master. A woman who was a very good friend of his one day said to him, Master, you never come to a satsang. You're never there. We never see you. We never have a chance to meet you. And he said to her, who told you I'm not at satsang? I'm always at satsang. I'll be there tomorrow. She said, Master, will you come to my house tomorrow for supper? Certainly. But I'll be there at satsang tomorrow also. The next day, at 6 o'clock, was it yesterday, he knocked on her door. She opened the door and he said, Sister, how come you didn't show up at satsang? I was there all day. She said, Master, I was too busy preparing for supper, knowing you'd be here. He says, oh, sister, what a humble price you paid for one love for me. Master visiting you in your house to eat a meal never gives you the blessing. There's no blessing in that way, because you come and grace your home and eat a meal with you. The living consciousness don't give you nothing that way. The living consciousness is only present with us at satsang. And it's not because he's sitting there. Satsang is going on in his whole right now, with the living master sitting right in there. And everyone in this room is getting the blessing by sitting at satsang. No matter if a satsang is going on in New York, Chicago, Boston, or any place where they are having a satsang by a mutual agreement. That mutual agreement binds the master to be present at satsang, because he is always with us in that name, in that current. We don't realize what we lose when we say we don't go to meditation or satsang. We've lost everything, because at initiation, he wipes out the debt, the karma from birth to initiation. But at satsang, every karma that you accrued from past lives is being wiped out when you attend satsang. So, where do you think you're going to wipe out your karma? By good works? Not possible. Only by grace. We are not lifted up by good works. Good works is only to sharpen our consciousness, to make us stick to the path. But it's the satsang, it's the grace, the presence of the satsang that removes the karma of the past life. The initiation removes the karma from birth to initiation. That's what is meant, taking away the sins of the world. Not the world out there, but the world image of the individual who's initiated. What is his world image? What that he thinks the world is to him? What it means to him? That is removed by the grace of initiation. And at that point, he's now liable to associate at satsang. When two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. Any good Christian gathering in that consciousness can have the same blessing just as much as any devotee falling apart from the living master can have that blessing, because that is what is meant, and that what happens scientifically within the person. It is not philosophy, nor is it conversation or seminars or lectures or good works. It's a special type of relationship with grace. There are three ways to merge back with God. The first way is by light. The first way is by breath. We will prove it by your three ways. Come, let us make man in our own image and likeness, male and female created him. And God breathed into man the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Through the breath, man can merge back to God. But he doesn't know what he's merging back to, because he's breathing doesn't necessarily see it. He may develop a very intimate association, because God can be very personal to him from the breath relationship. Now, the second way is, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt in man. That's the audible life current, the sun current passing through the body. That's the second way we can merge back to God. We can hear this current and merge with it. That also is non-intimate. There's no intimacy in it. There's no personality in it. But nevertheless, you can merge back to God by the sound current and by the breath. But then there's a third way. He that seeth me see the Father. I and the Father are one. Only the Son declare the Father. Therefore, we need a living person to relate to. That's the third way. I am the advocate. I am the bridge between this world and the other world. The living master is the only one that you can say. He is the third way back to the Father by sight and by chastisement from the mouth. Because he'll tell you when you're wrong and when you're right. And your ears will ring and you're smart, but you'll have to follow what he says, because you've got no other guarantee. Not by breath nor by hearing sound currents. Sound currents are good. They'll get you back. Breath will get you back. But when somebody tells you off with their tongue, you're going to start running. But that's the person you've got to love, because you can see them. That's why the living master is the key. At satsang, they give you this particular link to make you realize that they are always with you at all times, and out of sight is not out of mind. Now, we have three ways to go back to the Father. And all three are valid. But the one of the three that has more intimacy and sense of commitment, sense of responsibility, sense of measuring up, is the one that you can see. He that see me, see the Father. I and the Father are one. That type of relationship is the most dynamic type of merging back with the Father. And it's not every 1,000 years that this particular relationship goes on. It's every master passing on this sense of authority to his disciple when he decides to go on to the body. Because the master is the only real light of the world, while he's in the world, made up of a light that is creating illusions. This light you see here is not the real light. This light is a light of illusion. But the light that is the soul in the living master, that's the real light that lights up the world, that draws us back to merge back with the Father. So while he's in the world, he is the light of the world. And when he goes out, he has to pass it on to some other human being, transferring this power to make it possible to be a light in the world. Otherwise, we flounder again in the light of illusion and darkness and ignorance. So we do need the individual with his little idiosyncrasy, sometimes scratch his ears and tweak his toes, and and so forth. But he's necessary for the intimacy to develop the love between man and man. You see, why living masters come to the world, the holy focus, they are the sons of God. They are beloved because they have no link with material realm. They have no attachment for material things. They are called beloved for that. We are not beloved because we hold out our little pocketbook, or we hold out to the fellowship, and the little drum outside there, you know. Or where are we of our cemetery plots? A lot of things we hold out to. But the beloved Son of God has nothing. Even in all the levels of creation, he has nothing. For this is not my kingdom, you see, this realm of manifestation is not his home. So why should he not be beloved to the Father, who is all kingdoms, all consciousness, and all love? So when we realize this, we realize that the Father is only realized within the human being when he sees the living master. Satsang is that bridge, is that daily communion, that daily merging back to the spirit. And not because the master's physical form is not present with us, but his radiant form is always present with the disciple. The radiant form is always permeating. The radiant form is always guiding you and giving you grace. Now, some people may never see the physical form of a master, but will accept the fact that his radiant form is all pervasive. He's one with the Father, therefore he's omnipresent. He's one with the Father, therefore he's omnipotent. But he's not going to correct no problems for you. He's not going to perform no miracles for you. His omnipotence is merely to convey to you a guarantee for the time you're journeying in this material realm of ignorance, that you'll get out by his assurance when the time comes to account for your ignorance and account for your deeds. He will stand as a sponsor for you, that you can get out from this creation and not be subjected back to return by karma. That's the omnipotence of him. Satan has no power over me. The Lord of creation, the Lord of illusion, has no power over the soul that is identified with Father. So when the time comes for us to go out, who may be committed to some attachment or find some way in which we're going to be held down here, this radiant form, this particular quality of the living master is a guarantee, it's omnipotent. The assurance is that you have made some contact with it, you accept it, it will lift you up. Now, as Jesus said, if you even believe in the name, you are lifted out. Let alone if you say or live at a time when Jesus was alive. So it's the same thing applying to living masters. Even if you hear their name or you see them, the mere fact that you accept their existence and come into the realization that their omnipotence applies to you, you are also lifted up. It's a matter of acceptance for how far this omnipotence goes. Now, omniscience, that is their all-knowingness, masters see you all the time, though you may not see them. First time I met the living master in Dallas at the airport, we were sitting down and everybody was in the room. They were all silent. And then he looked around, he says to me, "Are these the initiates?" I said, "Yes, master." He looked around. I've seen them before. Many faces, I've seen many. Now, none of these people never went out of America, I don't think they ever go out of America. Yet he's seen them, and he's seen them many times before. Now, those who could not understand what he was saying missed the whole situation of what was occurring when he was saying that. But the master's omniscience was already permeating these lives, these souls that were brought into his presence, and that grace was already extending. Where he actually resides, and in his deepest communication with his spirit, he's perceiving many souls in their unawakened state or their awakened state, and drawing them back to that nature, that divine spirit. So we are not left out. In spite of ourselves, we are slowly pushed onwards towards God realization. Another thing was satsang. Tell you another story. There was a merchant who got off a train one day And then he got off, Porta met him and said, I'd be glad to carry your bags, but I have two prices. 3 rupees and I don't talk to you about God. 1 rupee and I talk to you about God. Pick a choice. So the businessman was very smart. He said, well, what have I got to lose? Might as well pay 1 rupee and let the man carry my bags and talk his head off about God. What am I going to lose? He had just come back from a big conference and he had a good medical checkup. Everything is hunky-dory. Business is good and he's feeling fine. He could afford to spend a couple hours listening to God and pay 1 rupee. Alright. While the man is, the porter is carrying his bags, the porter is talking to him about God. He says, you know, I've been blessed by God to see the future. And tomorrow you're going to die, probably. So the businessman smiles to himself, what a little illiterate man, though. I've just had the best medical doctor in the world check me out. I'm perfect. Business is going good. I'm going to die tomorrow. Anyway, the porter said to him, in the event when you die tomorrow, and when the angel of death comes, he's going to ask you the one universal question. And that is, which you prefer first, your good karma or your bad karma? That's the question it asks you. Which you prefer first? Your good karma or your bad karma? He said, but if I were you, I'd tell the angel of death I'd like my good karma first. Just tell him that. So the businessman took it as a joke and humored himself up. Anyway, he went home and it was alright. Next morning he got up and went to the business place. And exactly 12 o'clock falls over there. So far, the reporter is accurate. Second thing coming up, here stands the angel of death. Looks at the record, what do you want? Good karma or bad karma first? So far, reporter is accurate. The angel of death is asking the right question. So, being a businessman and a good gambler, he takes a hunch and he's going to gamble on what the reporter said. I want my good karma first. Well, the angel of death says, you're good what? Yeah, you're good, my good karma. So he looks to the record over and over. Hardly notice anything. Finally, right at the bottom, there's a little scribbling entitled The 20 Minutes in the Presence of a Saint. That's a good karma. Entitled The 20 Minutes, or a half hour, whatever it is, or 10 minutes, or whatever, in the presence of a saint. He said, that's my good karma? He said, the angel says, yes, that's your good karma. He said, well, I take it. Okay, he'll carry you on the airplanes to where this saint is and let you go to the satsang. So, in the airplanes, all of a sudden they were traveling through. And finally, he came to a satsang that was going on, a spiritual work, communion. And he says, now you can go in here. That's what he told this, the angel of death told this soul. You go in there. But I can't go in. And when the time comes and I signal you, you gotta come out and go face your bad karma. Alright. The soul went in. But he couldn't go too far because the vibrations were too strong. All he got is about 3-4 feet from the door. That goes to show you how the vibrations are strong in that satsang. So he sat down there. Keep looking into the light more and more in the middle satsang. Who does he see sitting in the middle satsang? The porter giving satsang. Well, in the meantime, the angel of death is keeping record and time up. He signals to the businessman to come on. Let's go. Time to go. So the businessman gets up to go out of the satsang to follow the angel of death. Just then the porter gets up and says, nobody leaves my satsang till I finish. Sit up. So you can imagine what the businessman is doing. He said I can go, he said to come. So he did me pay, come and go. Don't know what to do. The engineer says, come on, I'm late. You're holding up karma, you're holding up the universe. Get up again to go. And the porter says, nobody is a satsang till I'm over. It's not true, you sit up. So the angel of death goes and tells the archangel, that's the angel of Godhead now, that what has gone wrong? That's the foreman, you know. The guy will tell the foreman something gone wrong with one of the screws. The machinery ain't running right now. So when he told him that his soul doesn't want to come and face the bad karma, the archangel says, where did you put him? So he went out in the satsang to see. When he went there, what did he see? The satsang. And the archangel couldn't go in here to take out that soul. That soul automatically, as soon as he get up, as he was threatened by the archangel, he tried to get up to come out. The porter again says, nobody is a satsang till it's over. And right away, the archangel and the other angel went all the way up to the Lord of creation and complained that his soul doesn't want to come out of the satsang to go face his karma. Well, normally people take the bad karma first and then look forward to good things last. But this guy was taking the good karma first to look forward to the bad things last. Anyway, he went to the Lord, they went to the Lord of creation and told the Lord of creation what had happened. He said, impossible. There's no soul holding in any place or any avatar or guru or whatever it is holding satsang that he can't enter the Lord of creation. He can enter there and take up what he wants. So they came all the way down to where it was, and as soon as the Lord of creation pushed through the door to go take out the soul, all of a sudden, everybody see the Lord of creation bending on his knees and genuflecting and says, oh my master, I'm sorry. The Lord of the soul was sitting in the middle, giving satsang. The Lord of creation was recognizing who is his true guru now. The angel and the archangel recognized who the true guru was. The true guru is the Lord of the soul, not the Lord of creation. But the Lord of the soul was in residence in the portal, who was holding satsang. So the Lord of creation, the angel and the archangel had to withdraw, simply because once the soul had got that far in spiritual grace, it could not come back. It did not do karma to pay. He got there by grace. So the satsang, you begin to realize, is a very important association. That what is happening at this very moment in the satsang is grace relieving you of many, many karmic debts from past lives that form this physical body. That is how important satsang is. We don't begin to realize what group meditation means until we go deeper into spiritual life. Great pastors cannot tell us to do something and then not back it up with certain guarantees. That's why they say, when two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. Which means out of sight is not out of mind, and the master is always present, and consciousness is always present. Though we may not have the slightest inkling or feeling or awareness what is going on all the time. Now, many of us come in, just like the businessman, to a satsang. All the rest of us sitting there, they might have been initiated. They might have been initiates of that sadguru. But the businessman was not. He only had a contact, a mere association of being, taking his bags through the real road. Goes to show you how much grace is being given to the world. The more we understand the spiritual laws, the more we see that we are lifted up by grace. The spiritual path is one of grace. satsang. There's always a particular flow from the master to the disciple or the devotee. Or God through the master to the devotee. It's called darshan, the spiritual sight. My idea said, and here's the here, and the here. What occurs between the God Self, the Master, and the devotee can be perceived by the holy sight. That energy is brilliant and it passes through. And we don't realize what it is doing for us. That energy leaves the eyes and travels out to the world. And if one had been blessed merely to see those eyes with that radiant energy, that person is magnetized. But anyone who looks into their eyes after also becomes magnetized by that love. My wife can tell you an instant by that when she was in India. It's very important to those who don't understand what satsang is. Why certain things are maintained, certain procedures of living are maintained, simply because of the association. Now let me tell you about our own experience when she was in India attending satsang.
Quite a while, but he was still quite I get the idea of darshan somehow. And he kept asking the master about it. So finally the master said, tell you what, you go at the time of the full moon, or whatever, sometime in the month, new month, the end of the month, something, such and such a place, and there you will meet two people, and they will tell you what darshan is. So the man made preparation. It took him 50 days to get there. He waited. Anything but two black crows. And so the time elapsed that someone must have been there, and he came back. The master said, well, how did it go? He said, master, I didn't see them. There were two black crows. People didn't show up. Master said, well, maybe they were away for some reason. Maybe some family emergency or something. You go back next month. So the man went back the next month. And that time, all he saw were two swans. Came back, same story, you know. The master said, you go back next month, I'm sure they'll be there. So we went back next month. This time he saw a man and a woman. And he said, you don't know anything about darshan? My master said, I need some people here that will tell me about darshan. He said, yes. When you first came, we were two black crows. And because of the grace that flowed through you from your long contact with the master, we were changed into swans. Next time, after you were here, we became humans. That story may seem far-fetched. The people you witness every day, putting things together, and that becomes something else. How can you think that story is accomplished? You see miracles of transformation every day. Do you think that you can sit at the feet of the Lord or the stone? That's not possible. Lord,
expected somewhere. Financially, they line the streets. But if he does show up unexpectedly, just all sorts of things happen. I mean, word just flies, master, darshan, just everything stops. I mean, just like that. But one thing that did affect me so tremendously was I had gone with a group of brothers together into Amritsar for a shopping tour. Back late in the afternoon, well, really it was about this time of day, and they picked us up at the train station, but they were bringing us back in a little car that looks like Master's little car. From a distance, it's difficult to tell. I mean, people, especially when they don't know the makes of cars any better than I do, practically all look alike. And we were sitting in that car, and it was dusk, and they had been standing there along the road for 2 hours. We had been expected. And they had been standing there, this is several people deep, for about, or at least a half a mile. And when this little car came along, and they pressed forward, and here the, what they call them servidors, there these men stand, gripping hands along the line, holding these waves of people back, who are leaning forward, to just get a glimpse of Master's car, that maybe he might look out that window, and they might catch a glimpse of his eyes. And to see the expression on those people's faces, we just broke down and cried. We couldn't help it. We weren't Master, and here they were just longing to see Master. I tell you, that's an experience of us. It really does something to us. We don't begin to know how to love and how to reverence Master, how to appreciate Master. Those people stood there 2 more hours yet until Master did come. They think nothing of them. There was one man who, soon after President Master Vera was made Master, he came from way down in southern India to see him. And Master was out watching people doing seva. And so the fellow that you approach, the question if you can go up and speak to Master, said, all right, what do you want? He said, oh, I want to see Master. He said, I've just got to talk to Master. Some things have happened, but I've just got to talk to Master. He had a tremendous tragedy in his family. I've sort of forgotten all the details, but it's one that would shake anybody to be very poor. And the man said, well, sit down, and I'll ask Master if he can see you. Well, Master was talking to some of the Holy Architect and some of the other fellows that had charge of helping around the fair. I don't know if they had some sort of problem. And the conversation went on, and then something came up, and it was time for Master to leave, and the man still sat there. And things delayed Master, and 2 days later, he came back for seva. He said, what's that man doing over there? Have I seen him before? And I brought him home. That's the man I told him, you know, that Master would see him in just a little bit, and I was sick. So he went over there, and sure enough, the people had noticed that man had not moved from that spot. And it was during the cold season. There was a dozen trees over there, because for anyone's memory or along the floor. But it was pretty chilly and cooler nevertheless. And that man had not moved. And that's what told him to sit there and tell me you could see him. How many of us would be there?
Thank you. When we begin to realize what is involved in the science of the soul, we take a back seat. But the many mistakes we make and stumble around in terms of devotion. The journey is one of devotion. One of love. That's why we are asked to love the Lord with all of our mind. Now that man had no other thought in his mind than what he was told to him. Sit there and look to the Master like a boundary. And love with all of the heart, the longing to talk, the longing to see. The heart was sufficient with the answer given that the Master told him to wait. That's all the heart needed to know that he had to wait. That he would be spoken to or he would be seen by the Master. With all your strength, he said it was almost winter time, then there almost 24 hours in one spot, a strength and a lot of energy built up. Simply because of the love. And the whole soul, final realization that the Master spoke to him, the ease is conscience. And the one of those as itself, the man had to see a living person to relate to. So, you see, it's how difficult. Most of all, when we look at the petty things, we get uptight, get angry, strike out, take resentment, and don't begin to realize what we're losing out. Until we start to compare ourselves with those who really understand the spiritual life. The spiritual life is one of service, one of patience, one of love. Tomorrow morning we have a meditation at 5 o'clock on this master of practice. And to be here, after the meditation, we have our breakfast, then we may go out to the retreat grounds for a while. So those who have a chance to see the retreat grounds. But I think we may have some safety or
if you weigh 117.
You weigh 117 pounds. So if you find out
you... So that's like a percentage of your total amount of energy.
Yeah. Now, if you weigh out your whole body, see how much energy she's got in her whole body in 24 hours? Remember, she weighs 117 times 186,000 times 186,000. This is our whole body energy. That's our total body energy per second.
Can you figure out how long you'll live by that? Oh, yeah. If you just sit there.
So the amount of energy that you've got in your body is designed for you to live a long, long time.
33.
We don't use it. Simply because we don't know how to use it.
I'm wore out already.
To show you what you've got, the life of one individual and the power locked up in him is more than that. Two or three atom bombs going off. You have the equivalent of 12 suns. That's the brilliance of the soul. That's the amount of energy you have in your body. The equivalent of 12 suns and the radiance of 12 suns. It's already been measured by the ancient scientists a long time ago by their intuitive methods or seeing it inside, that you can light up with your energy from your body equal to 12 suns, 12 actual suns in the sky that gives off their BTUs in measurement. You've got that much energy in your physical body. Now a master who's fully realized has the equivalent of 24 suns. Now, the darkness in which we are trying to go out from this realm of consciousness of body relationship is the brilliance of 13 suns. So when a person is completely detached from all physical things in this world, his body radiates the equivalent of 13 suns. But he cannot enter into Satchkan or consciousness acting on energy on his own. He doesn't have the power to go through that force field. The density is too dark, too thick. He needs the brilliance or the light of a realized master who has the brilliance of 24 suns to act as a bridge to bring him across. So we're talking of physical things which are spiritual things at the same time. You see how far we are down the scale, and yet you see how much energy we have, and see how long we are going to be in creation, spinning our wheels.
Adano, I have two questions. One is the power that we have, is it scattering or is it just latent? And how do you get that through the extra sun power, if there's 13 for a realized person?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now, like when I was sleepy and I couldn't, and I knew that I would drift off into a dream and fall off my chair and be silly, so I stayed awake. Where was all that power? Was it scattered or was it latent?
It's latent.
And then you tap more when you're realized.
Right. It's all latent. The energy is latent in you. You don't, the brilliance of 12 suns are active in you, which you dissipate out through motions of desires. And the moment the desires terminate, then the full potential of 13 starts to become active or vibrate.
What terminates?
You let go.
You let go of your desires, which is causing energy to dissipate.
What about your energy blocking?
That also is interfering. So that's because of desires. That's the karmic action. The action of your desire causes a block. Whatever you do and whatever it reacts in you, that causes an energy block in your body. And therefore you're caught up in the energy block and you can't get out of the energy block. So you say, I'm caught up in one of these. Right? That's the energy block. So. Now, if all of these were suddenly lifted out and you have a clear mind, then the radiance in that mechanism is already clear. So you'd say that person has now the brilliance in measurement, the equivalent of 12 of 13 suns. But that person cannot get through that other force field in consciousness and meditation, except by the Satguru who has the brilliance of 24 suns. He is the true light of the world. He is that manifest 24
the goddess in polarity. 12 by polarity. The 12 signs of the zodiac are locked up in us.
Well, if that did dim his life a little bit,
Again, I have two questions. Second one is that a master will identify himself with the entire mass of the universe if he's going to move like that, if he's going to be present at the substance all over. So he really has an infinite energy then.
Now you understand why he says, I am with you always to the end of time. Then two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. We are talking of energy. We're not talking of psychology. We're talking of actual energy force. That is coming, spinning the whole gamut of creation. Now, if you imagine the 24 suns, how much energy this is putting out. You take 24 suns and concentrate and see if you put out this energy. It'll go in units of miles per second. You can imagine how far you have to go out in space. Now imagine this figure in terms of a straight line out in space. 4,728,732,000 miles from where you're standing out, this total energy stretches that distance.
Per second.
Fantastic. Now, when you come to realize that it has the brilliance of 12 suns, that means multiplied by 12. So we first got to find out that this is equivalent to 12 suns. So one sun has this brilliance. So you multiply by 12 to give you your brilliance. So you got that much radiance still going out in time-space continuum. So you begin to realize, hey, wait a minute. I'm really wasting a lot of energy. Because the gurus, they all say, there are only three things why we leave the body. The three basic things we leave the body, one, what you eat, two, what you breed, and three, how much motion you make. Now, your body is designed to process a certain quanta of food from birth to death. Your body is designed to process a certain amount of oxygen or gases from its birth to death. Designed also to perform certain physical motions from birth to death. Now that quanta is already established. We cannot change that quanta. We can only adjust it in terms of conservation. But that quanta is set up by cause-effect action. For every action there's an equal reaction. You put in food, it's got to be processed. You breathe, you got to process it. You move your hand, it's got to process it. So unnecessary actions are actions going on for the body. Now, all these are tabulated on an energy level. Now, if one of these comes up first or used up first, then the body cuts off. So you can't go before your time, even those who try to commit suicide. The physical action of committing suicide, some make it, some don't make it. That's because you cannot go before your time. The action or the breath or the food that is processed has come up as the quanta to be terminated. So your termination or exit point in this universe is predetermined or preset by diet or food, by breath, respiration, or by motion in the body. And one of these will have to come first. So somebody eat a meal and have a heart attack. So the food took him. Some person drowned, the breath took him. Some person fell off and got a broken back and died, the motion took him. Somebody breathed bad air, gas, the breath became again. See? Somebody was poisoned. The food took him. One of the three, an emotion again, will take you in terms of it.
Adano, are you talking about quantity and then that's it? Only so much and that's it?
Mm-hmm. See, the body is designed by these three emotions to exist as a unit in this universe for indefinite periods of life energy. Now, what you eat and what you process determines the length of time that this body will handle. Now, what you breed is already processed and set up as a time cycle. And what you move and do, that is set up as a motion cycle. And one of the three is already determined which comes first, which you use up first. Now, you using it up in the principle of generation. On the generation cycle, we'll come to what is called the five element law of the generation cycle. You're using it up on a generation cycle. You're generating action. All the time, this way. To eat, to breed, to move. Now, if you eat properly, you conserve. If you eat minimal, you conserve. If you overeat, you do what? You're discharging and you, what do you call it? And if you overeat and you eat wrongly, you are discharging, you are degenerating the cycle of the body. The science of the soul is not a curative science, it's a preventative science. God is total prevention all the time, balance.
Adon, does this have anything to do with cooked celery requiring more work to digest than it gives you back energy? Is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But we evolved down, not up, down. So we got the wrong notion that we're evolving up. We evolved down, we came down, totally a soul force, having all these qualities by virtue of consciousness. Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. The soul does not need food to exist. But the soul left the creative intelligence and became slower and slower, and got involved lower and lower in matter, becoming dependent now on the solid substance as food, to process it, becoming dependent now on the air as a life support system, and depending upon the motion action as a means of occupation and involvement. We are at our lowest peak in spiritual growth. We are not at our highest peak. We left our highest peak simply because something deep down in you tell you, this is not where you're supposed to be. You don't know why. If this is truly where you're supposed to be, then you would have evolved it up instead of down. Something is telling you that this is not where you're supposed to be. So that means you left something better to come down to where you are. Now where you are in a life support system that is using oxygen. Now that's not say you're in a life support system using methane or sulfuric acid or carbon dioxide. So I look beautiful to you or ugly in this oxygen support level. Look at me in a methane life support level and I look different. But I'll be beautiful to you or you'll be beautiful to me in a life support system of methane because we all will look have the same conformities of the tissues. So in a methane system, my nose may be flared out more, my eyes may be pulled wrong more, and the ears may be pulled back more or pulled up more. And we all look beautiful to each other in a methane system. Let us leave the methane system and come down in an oxygen system, and right away I'm a crude looking creature, or a horrible looking, grotesque type of a werewolf. Now, here we are in the oxygen support system, we all look beautiful. Take you and put you in a methane system, what do you look to the people in methane?
Yeah, probably.
You look horrible. So we get, but the poet is glimpsing a little of the spiritual truth, eyes are, beauty are in the eyes of the beholder. A very little glimmering of the inner truth of what is going on. Now, take you in the sulfuric life support system, where entities live on like sulfuric acid to support them. The mouth are pulled back. In fact, it's just a faint line. And the eyes are just a faint line. There are hardly no cheekbones.
What planet is that? Venus?
Yeah. No, Venus is then more beautiful. Our next astronauts that will invade us are from Jupiter. The Chevanians.
And what is their life support?
Their life support is carbon monoxide.
When they will do that?
We ain't ready for them yet, don't worry.
Who are we getting now?
What we're getting now is a life support system from Mars.
All these automobiles are going to attract mass.
We haven't done enough spillways yet to generate the carbon monoxide to attract the Jupiterians to come to us.
We haven't got it ready for them yet.
You see, a planet becomes a sun at the end of 7 billion years. Every 7 billion years, a planet burns up or bursts out into a sun by one or two methods, implosion or explosion. By virtue of the goodness of the character of the entity life, or by virtue of the negativeness or evil of the characters of the entity life on that particular planet. So if all the entity life on this planet suddenly became good at the year 7 billion, the planet is only 4.5 billion years old now. So planet Earth has got a long way yet to go in order to become a sun on its own and form a planet system of her own. Now, she's on moving. So our entity life hasn't reached the point where it's going to be totally negative or evil or destructive, nor has it reached the total positive point where it's going to be all good. If you reach one of the two first, the concentrated energy will cause the planet to become a sun. It will burst, go into thermal action.
So does this mean that Jupiter, these people are more highly evolved?
No, when you say, don't go jumping around, we're using terms of evolve, we're using that as a measurement in relation to mechanical activity and dexterity.
They're
older. That's the
good. Oh, all right.
They're older.
But it's still, there's still the decision has been made, but they're going to be positive, aren't they?
Negative. No, when you say a person is more spiritually evolved, we're talking something different.
They've just been around longer.
They've been around longer. Spiritually evolved people are humble people. As we get it termed, the meek will inherit the earth. The only spiritual people who will stay on the planet, which means earth, not this planet, which will remain in the cosmic system as a manifestation, are the meek, the truly humble. They are the inheritors. Now, that doesn't say they are less evolved or more evolved, it's because they have reached the spiritual quality of where their nature and their attitude is one of a child. That doesn't say they're childish, like an imbecile walking around or playing with a chicken without a head. It's like seeing a full-grown man, 50 years, with all the exuberance and the joy and the quality of and purity and innocence of a child. This is what we're talking about. This transformation, this cellular change, and no matter what life support system you find in, this quality will be there. Now, what would be peculiar about him is this. If you find him on the earth, he's very slender, tapered. He will look more like a half man, half woman, and the women will look the same. They all look like Krishna walking on the road. You ever seen the Krishna body? Yeah, they all look like that. In every planetary system that has a life support activity of the fully evolved quality, it's like that slender, reed-like body. They're all like that. And most of them, if you are spiritually alert and you can see fourth dimensional, you'll see a star always here, right? The five element star and their forehead. It's open. Not the eye. There's a star.
What is this star?
It's called the five element law. Man, look at him. How many points have I got?
Five.
This is an imprint of God on the forehead. That's a 5 point. The star of creation. Imprinted on that realization.
So what does it mean when you find one of them?
When you find him, that person has total control of the five elements. What are the five elements?
He's self-realized.
No, God-realized.
He is God-realized.
He has the five elements under his control. That means earth, this finger, water.
Everyone would not see this.
No.
air, earth, water, fire, air, ether. Ether. This is the sum force, this is the force in the thumb. We give life and we say this to an individual who is under what?
Life or death.
Life or death. And we say this, thumbs down, that means that we take his life away from him. When it comes to justice, justice is a condition by which the human mind seeks the highest point of decision. So when we appeal to justice, we appeal to the highest point of our mind. So if the radial energy passes through the thumb, and you look at your hand, nature itself, this body language already, it's called mudra language or gesture language. It's the science of the soul. But the thumb is indicating where the control is. See? So if you say thumbs down, they're not going to allow this particular individual to exist beyond this point. So his life ends there. If they say thumbs up, then the energy goes up. Now let's look at the core circulation of the body and see if this is really true or is just an imaginary principle. If we do thumbs down, where is the circulation going? It's going down, right? So circulation goes from left to right, down. If you say up, the circulation is coming up. So if we grant a man a reprieve or life, we always say thumbs up. Now, you know this other way? Give me a reprieve from my foot. You see, body language just tells you a lot about yourself, and at the same time, it's soul language. It's common sense, and yet it's wisdom, and it's truth. It's comical like heck, but this is the way it works. We are learning more and more of ourselves, and less of the so-called churchianistic ignorance, you see. But not the church. The church has a purpose. We want to know ourselves because it's the only real church body.
What if you should see a sun on somebody's forehead?
Well, you're seeing the five-pointed element stars there out of the sun.
I mean, there's really no other thing that you would see on that
individual. No, it's supposed to be a five. It represents the full control of the five elements. Lord of the universe.
Is it blue?
No.
Gold. Wouldn't it be gold?
It's gold. That means the person is in full control of all the elements.
And that it does not mean that it's death realized.
It's God realized because God he has realized. To come from the fifth realm. It's all five. He can't come from the four elements. Earth, water, fire, air. He's got to master the element of this one. Yeah. This is the master current. He's got to master life. No man take my life from me. I have the power to lay it down and pick it up. This is what a true realized man is. A true God realized master. A true messiah. Or guru, lift up. The word means to lift up or dispel darkness.
Does that have anything to do with the rule of current and the right hand law of electricity through the coil, the electromagnetic, and then the force, and those laws?
Yes, we have not found anything new that the creative intelligence did not make. We are only duplicating it and putting it in a particular type of semantics to satisfy our intellect. But we have not found anything new. The whole universe of marvelous creations and inventions are looking you fierce in the face like that, waiting for you to recognize it. Simply because you sit down with your intellect and only pick out a little of it, you
think it's a model.
It's a model. It's a model.
Like music?
The whole body is the model of the universe. It's a miniature model of the universe. If you can read the language of the body, you have the whole entrance to the language of the universe and take out any invention you want from it. Now, when Henry Ford made his internal combustion engine, where do you think he got the idea from? And he wrote it down where he got the idea, because he knew Yogananda personally.
The lungs.
What else?
Digestion.
Yes. There was a dream he had one night where he saw the lungs and the digestive tract working as a mechanical gadget. And it was the first gave birth to the idea of the internal combustion engine. And you'll always be known that the internal combustion engine was taken from the lung because that's the natural internal combustion engine and the intestinal tract. We have a working model of everything here that you see outside. Now, where we get the idea of telephone? Not because Mr. Bell made it, you know. You ever play around with a tin can and a string, two tin cans, and try to twang it, and communicate? That was the same thing. It came from the ears. Hitting it, it'll groan. So, and if you squish a piece of thing on a piece of thread or a string, it'll make a zone, a drone. And by that, Mr. Bell decided to transmit those sounds electrically until the unit was put together, representing the nerves and how they work and transmit. Then the idea of the telephone came into manifestation. It was all from the human body. Most of your early inventors, if you read into their autobiographies or their biographies, you'll find they were very, very deep mystics. They all knew the laws of the human body, especially men like Einstein. Einstein and Edison. Edison found more mystical principles in his own body than anything else. Now, the electric light was the thing that puzzled him the most. His mother was dying, needed an operation. The doctor told him he needed enough light to perform the operation. So Edison took all the little lamps they had in the house and the big mirror and let the light bounce against the mirror and form a tremendous glow right over his mother's body so that the surgeon could operate. But those lights were oil lights or candles. They were not electrical power, but he wanted to know how could he magnify candle power by bouncing it through a glass, which was a mirror. And because he could close his eyes and see candle power inside him. And it was bounced inside. And he could look up in the sky and see candle power bounced on the moon at night from the sun and act as a mirror. So the concept was slowly growing inside of him, how to bounce it. Until he realized that it had to be a vacuum. So what have you got? The incandescent bulb as a result of many years of work. But the filament all had burnt out because he couldn't find the right type of material for the filament. Until he found the human hair, most natural filament for energy. It's got silicon, tungsten in it. So when he put the tungsten all around the wire and it lit up, it didn't burn down, it kept cool. But at the same time, it glowed. And in the vacuum of the glass, here he had illumination for the first time without heating up too fast. The models are all here, but this is where it is. Okay. Anyway, we're coming back to what prevents us from meditating, the thoughts that plug up our mind, plug up the energy.
Can I ask, by clear mind, you mean that no thinking is going on? Because thinking involves...
Yes, clear mind, for the Chinese, mean empty-minded, empty-headed. Now, if somebody accuses you of empty-headed, you can walk around and laugh because you got one thing over them. That means you are truly in focus, in clarity, with consciousness, and then perception is fourth dimensional. That means you see through the time lapse. You can now, it's called clairvoyant, seeing clearly, seeing for the first time through every dimension of matter. So a clear mind is a clairvoyant individual, meaning the third eye is open. You ask yourself, why can't you not get results in meditation, and what are you trying to do in meditation? It's because these conditions are blocking the mind from becoming clear. Now, see what is causing the blocking. Look how much energy you're dissipating in a split second. Right? And the brain is fluctuating like crazy. Now, how can we bring this down to a point that clear mind can be recognized? At what level can we get down this energy? Because the energy can't stop. There's no way you can stop it. You've got to take the next breath. The only important thing in your life, the next breath, and the one that you're using right now. So if you don't use up the one that you got now, by the time you anticipate the next one, it won't come. You have to use the one you're doing right now. And the one you're using right now is allowing you to think all these things. You get it? You couldn't begin to think of all these conditions in your body if you didn't take that breath. A quarter of it. I breathe 14 times to the minute. So one quarter of it is allowing us to do a lot of fantasy today. Lots of imagination, lots of activity. Even, you know what energy it took to do that? A lot of energy. Can you begin to consider energy going like that? Do like that. Empty like that. Imagine how heavy is my foot. Just from here to here. And I can move it there. Look how many inches I move it. And look at the speed I move it. Get it? You see? All right. You sit down to meditate. To hold this position, you have a lot of energy, a lot of weight, mass involved to hold the situation, to keep your mind steady.
What about it when you release the energy block, you got energy out for and then you put energy in? What are you doing?
You haven't lost anything because it's called conservation of energy. Energy is not created, nor is it destroyed. So if it's not created, it's not destroyed. Then what? It's recycled. Good. Now we come back to the word re. We have to regenerate it. We have to recycle the energy. There's the import. That's the important part of the energy.
So it's not lost.
That is, therefore it can't be lost. It's never lost. Because it's not created. You don't create energy. So if we don't create energy and we can't destroy it, how did the energy come into existence?
Just here.
Man's on the ball. It's a gift. Energy is a gift by virtue of manifestation.
I need a bigger gift today.
Come, let us make man in our own image and likeness. Male and female create him. And God breathed the breath of life into man. That is something he had to project out of himself. He had to give out of himself. This creative principle, this cosmic principle, had to give this form something of value. And that something of value is life energy, which has no start, has no end. Now, you ever see a spider? How does the web come into existence?
Every stomach.
You mean to tell me he's got a whole pile of web coil up in there?
No, it's a liquid which, isn't it?
All right, continue.
It's a liquid which has coagulants of sorts in it, and when it's exposed to the air, it hardens.
Uh-huh.
And it sticks to itself, and then he makes it, he extrudes it, and then he carries it along to the places he wants and attaches it.
Okay, now you're looking exactly at how God set up the world. You didn't learn nothing new.
Plasma,
right! What do you think of the whole thing is all about? Cosmo bioplasma. You, the answer is in you, the truth is in you. I didn't make the truth, God didn't make, the truth is in you. Seek the truth which is in you, and it'll make you free, free man, Lord of yourself. Seek the inward knowing. You know it intuitively by the model. The model is a spider. Now put it together in your mind and you'll have a clear comprehension. Go over what you just said.
There's a liquid which, when extruded, hardens and has form, and there's design in the making of it, which would mean that the states that we know of, plasma is a very difficult state for us to understand scientifically at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's gas and solid and
mm-hmm.
liquid and gas.
Mm-hmm.
Those are slower, heavier, dried forms of that liquid, which would be plasma.
All right. So solid. What
energy
we got? What we got?
Plasma,
what we got? Solid, liquid, thermal, gas, sun. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. The spider's making the same thing out of his tummy. Because he's the result of those five oceans. God ain't making no more new things. He don't need it already. If you look at your hand, it's all five there, right? The five, how many senses have you got?
Well, yeah, five.
And when they work together, you call it what? Sixth sense. Coordination. Or equilibrium. Focus, balance. And sixth sense is what you call intuitive, knowing from within. So you don't have a sense, in the true sense of the word, as a sixth sense. It's a coordinate of all these forces acting as one, which you call your spiritual nature. You see it now?
Yes.
Good. So they got the spider is projecting all apart from his own mechanism out and extruding it out. So in the web, you see everything, all five of those forces are forming the web. Now the same way, this creative force of life, that's why it's a gift to man. Life is a gift, not something that he can command. It's a gift. Somebody gives you a gift, what would you do to it? You would cherish it, unless you don't want it. Now, if you take your life into your own hands, who are you going to give it to?
Back
to who?
To God.
All right, so take back your gift. Think.
Where you sold them, you got it.
All right, so you don't give back the gift to nobody. You were given the gift of life to be a soul. How can you give it back? Is that an Indian giver?
By realizing it.
They say the Indian giver takes back his gifts, right? This principle don't work that way. It doesn't recall. You're stuck with it. That's why you got karma, and that's why you got reincarnation, and you got resurrection. You got to go through the principle of degenerate, generate, and regenerate all the time. There is no way to get off of it now once the gift is given. It's like the cobweb. The fly is stuck with it when he gets in it. And there is no way that spider is going to pull that cobweb back into his tummy. He just up and leave it. Or extend it where he wants to extend it. Does he think he can take the cobweb back into his tummy? That's the model. The model is empirical. It won't change. We just got to learn to understand it.
So we have to live balanced life.
Yes. And that is what you call the middle path. Coordination. Focus. Balance. Always maintaining the balance, the spiritual focus. Now, when you're at the balance, only then you can execute choice properly. Otherwise, you cannot execute your choice. You don't have the power to execute proper choice unless you're balanced. You'll make the wrong choice. But when you're balanced, you can be pretty frustrated because you don't know which is the right choice too. So it's better to stay balanced and don't make a choice and let it happen. Then you don't get frustrated.
See? Did you say all that over again?
Really?
I heard it.
I said when you're balanced, you're liable to get frustrated to make a choice.
Yeah.
And if you don't make a choice, you can't get frustrated. See? Because you're already balanced. So where's the frustration going to come in? It can't come in because you're balanced. You're natural. Then if you're natural, it will happen, it will flow. Simply because when you're balanced, every need is provided for you to stay in balance. Not every want. Your wants cannot be fulfilled when you're balanced. That's impossible. It would be highly impossible for energy to do a thing like that. But energy, by virtue of balance and coordination, will fulfill each need to keep it in a state of conservation. It can't be one-sided. It will always flow back evenly, just like the wave on the ocean, up and down, along the beach and back. In tides, we have a high tide and a low tide, but the water ain't going nowhere. And now if you put the heat to the sun, it already goes up like a vapor. And what happens to it after a while? Good. So the same law is going on to show there is no loss. It is always here in different cycles. And your own spiritual life is based on a cyclic movement. You get it?
I get it, but I don't like exactly.
You get it, but you don't like it. That's what I want to say to you. So you have to be more realistic now. You get it, but you don't like the way it's happening. You want it to do it the way you think it should happen to you, so it benefits you.
Well, that might be a good idea.
Oh, but that's what you're saying already, telepathically, you see? We all want to be able to be in a position that we have a unique control on life, that we don't want to face it because we will make wrong choices.
Could you say that again?
Yeah.
We all want to be in a unique position to control life, to make decisions, and not to be accountable for it. There's such a unique state that
we don't want the responsibility.
We don't want
the
responsibility of your decisions or your actions. So you want to have life where you can always draw on it. It's like what you call unlimited credit.
Then you're separate.
That's right.
Separation.
Okay. So your mind will tell you that you can't do that after a while. Your body will show you can't do that. So basically, when you're meditating, what are you really trying to do to yourself? Coordinate. So let us get back now to a true understanding again of the word meditation, and we see why we are trying to meditate and what meditation really implies. And see if all these things don't match up with meditation properly.
All your work's going
on. I just thought, I'm glad he didn't factor my age in there. We'd been riding on his wall.
Okay, we'll take the word meditation.
Is an acronym, just talking us from the English language, but basically the Chinese or the Oriental people have always used the word as an acronym, as a way of compiling their whole cosmic science into one behavioral technique. To hide the science from the uninitiated mind, they simply compel or compress all the cosmic principles into one word. Left it like that as a sort of a challenge, and it's a Gordian knot. When time comes along and the initiate or individual understands it, he can cut the knot and use it or get through it. M stands for mind or cosmic consciousness. Cosmic self.